Welcome to the February 2013 Message of the Month, featuring the President, Founder, and Guiding Light of Light Within, David Hulse. This month's message is a blast from the past. It's a message that was recorded during our very first retreat in 1992, and is David doing a small group discussion on pre-biblical history. When I'm done with the intro here, you'll hear from David as to why he chose to reissue this message. For more information, you can contact us at Light Within, 8508 Park Road, number 193, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28210. Or on the web, of course, at www.lightwithin.com. Or you can call 980-949-8921. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift, but your journey is a choice. We thank you for choosing to spend a part of your journey with us. We now join David, where he will introduce this month's Message of the Month.
Hi, this is David, and I hope you're going to enjoy this month's Message of the Month. I've done something a little different this month with the prompting of a dear friend who was not with us back in the 80s and the 90s and has begun to listen to some of the old tapes from that time, has so activated something in me that for the first time I've begun to go back and listen to some of these tapes. I've been extremely blessed and challenged and many things. It's brought up many things in me. So in listening to a tape that was made in 92 at a retreat, I think I was doing just a class there, but it's called Pre-Biblical History. But this is some messages that I don't want to get lost, the fact that we are moving into a different age of technology in which everything now is more digital, CDs and downloads on the internet. And these are cassettes, of course. So I've started to actually take some of these cassettes that I find have a very special anointing for that present time, which is so much about now. So I think we had the revelation, but now it's time to walk in that revelation. So I hope you're really going to enjoy the energy of this. I'm sure a lot of you were most likely at this meeting. This is the first retreat I believe we had in 92, which was a very powerful retreat for you that remember that. I think Gene Davis was there, and who, by the way, I've started listening and reading his stuff. His books appear to me every once in a while, and I happened to call an old number in one of the books and got his ex-wife, who was so gracious to send me 12 of each of his books because I want to teach some of his classes, because no one's doing that, and I felt like he had a powerful word that needs to continue. So that's another thing that I'm doing. I'm really feel that I'm doing a lot of cleaning up of the past with the new book that is coming out, which we're waiting for any day now to come out, which is God on Assignment as You, The Real Story of Incarnation. I just received the first book, and it's a powerful, challenging book of a revelation that was born actually back in the late 80s, but is certainly, again, for now. All of these things seem to be so prophetic for the present time. So I hope you're going to enjoy this particular tape on the pre-biblical history.
According to as to who was here, I didn't know exactly where I wanted to start, and I don't want to repeat a lot of old things of you that have had the tapes, and I will add some new things, but we need to real quickly go through the major situations, and this is on pre-biblical history. Again, I want to repeat to you that so many of us have assumed that the Bible itself, the story of the Bible, enhances all the time there is, and that is not correct. The Bible and Judeo-Christianity certainly covers a very small span of time in which time has been around for many billions of years, and that man has been on the earth. Man has basically been Homo sapien for at least around close to 4 million years. And he existed before he was Homo sapien. Man at one time was the Anthropos man, which means divine man, before he became Homo sapien man. So basically, if you really get back into understanding that man has basically always been around, that he doesn't just start at being a human being, but that is just one level of his existence as Homo sapiens. So man has been around, and when you understand, as we teach in this ministry, that man is a part of the essence of that that is God or the Creator, that would make sense that God and man have always been around in some form or another. So we need to realize that there has been an existence long before the beginning of Christianity and long before the interpretation that the Bible gives us. These are simple things, but we need to realize them because they are things we only assume. The Bible is a product of more than one document. It is not something that has just been written in a chronological order, but it has been compiled and put together to be the Bible from different directions. And we want to deal with the basic four documents that make up the Old Testament, which is the Yahwehist or J document. The other is the Eloist document, the Deuteronomous document, and what is called the Second Isaiah document. And these all are important because they all fit a certain time, a certain place, certain events and circumstances that influenced how man defined himself, defined his God, and defined his being, his territory, and how that he viewed himself in each other. Judeo-Christianity actually starts with Abraham. It does not start with the story of creation. And of course, we would assume it does because that's the first thing you read in the Bible. You start in the beginning of the Bible, you read about in the beginning was God, and God created this and God created that. But that's not where Judeo-Christianity as we know it started. It all starts with Abraham. Now, I prefer to see the characters of the Bible, and I will not argue for a minute the fact of the literalism historically of particular men, but I rather would see them as the different stages in which man has gone through in his process of his own evolution. So, if you'll allow me, we would like to refer to Abraham as a place in mankind rather than one separate individual. Many people believe, you know, Adam was just one separate man and not understand that it is speaking again of man as a human race in a certain place, in a certain level. And Abraham is a very important point in the evolution of man. Let me quickly bring you up to this time. Now, Abraham represents a time of about 1,800 years before the time of Jesus Christ and what happened within the evolutionary leap of mankind. First, understand that and to begin the very origin and beginning of what is later to be recorded as Judeo-Christianity, let's go back and understand some of the things that lead us up to that time and what is taking place and what had been happening for thousands of years before we come to this time that Abraham experiences what he called the voice of God, or what is recorded as the voice of God, which is his own evolutionary leap. It was the automatic leap within himself that called him out. And that's the first thing we know about Abraham, is he heard the call to come out of the land of Ur into the land of the Chaldees. So we have to understand this coming out that man is experiencing from the place that he had been in for a long, long time. Up to this time, and what is ending here, is an era in which man did not separate himself from the earth. He did not separate himself from nature. He only beheld things through his senses and defined what we would call deity or God by what he saw that sustained him and gave him his life. And that would make sense when you realize, when you stop and realize at some primitive point that man would look at the earth and see that the earth yielded the fruit, the vegetation, the streams of water, and all that he needed that gave him his life. Therefore, he gave honor and what we would say worship to the earth. Now, the earth becomes Mother Earth or feminine. And the reason for that, that is man also through his senses beholds the woman. He sees that the female gender is that that creates life at a physical level. Man doesn't. He looks at the woman and sees that through her this mysterious, magical event takes place that creates physical bodies that comes through the birth canal. Now, up to this point, man does not know that he carries the semen or the seed. Sexuality to this point has never been associated with procreation. Therefore, the woman herself has this divine ability to create life. Therefore, deity is totally female and feminine and not male. The male is actually at this point more subservient to the female and serves her because she is the personification of Mother Earth. Are you following me this far? Mother Earth gives her the food. This is why man became very geographical. To have left a certain geographical area would have been irreverence to the Mother Earth that gave you your food and sustained it. So no man or no tribe went out of that region that sustained him. Never. Now you'll see why it's important when he gets the call to come out. See, this is an evolutionary leap, not only geographically, but psychologically. He's coming out of that narrowed area that he has lived in all of his life. And this took a lot of get up and go to move beyond those boundaries. There is no idea of spirit at this time. In fact, it's put me in a place that I almost want to reevaluate and monitor the idea of spirit as Christianity has taught spirit to us as a separate entity outside of ourselves. But let's come back. There's no idea of God of spirit. There is nothing outside of the natural. And by the way, we still have a lot of people who still hold this idea of Mother Earth and of the fact of this aspect of deity being the feminine aspect of deity as Mother Earth and still accepting a father spiritual and a Mother Earth coming together. You that come from the more metaphysical New Age aspects are very familiar with that. We don't find that much in the traditional fundamental Christianity, but you will find that more in New Thought people that are more environmental in their thinking. This is why there's a great environmental movement going on in this country who feels that we are doing very bad things to an aspect of deity itself, which is the earth, that when we're raping the earth and what we're doing to our streams. And you do wonder with the hurricanes and the things that are coming on, it seems like sometimes Mother Earth is just rising up and saying, no more, no more. And also there's a time of cleansing that the earth goes through of itself and so on and so forth. But this is the setting and this is the stage that we're coming to that is coming to end this particular level in evolution that man has come to. Man Seeing the woman as deity, serve the woman, and one of the most, what we'd say, spiritual acts that the man could do was have the privilege of opening the birth canal where creation came from. This is why I said to you that was in the class earlier that sexuality to that point was a very part of worship. This is how it came into the temple even. It was so divine and so a part of worship that it was not seen as some lustful or carnal thing. It was an honor for the man to come and to open the birth canal where creation came from for the woman. But he did not know that his entry into the birth canal and the leaving of his seed is what started and produced life. You got to understand, this is where Judeo-Christianity is going to redefine the woman. Tim, would you please turn me down or something? I'm kind of roaring or making funny sounds here. Are you with me this far? See, a lot of people, and this is, many anthropologists know this, many scientists know this who have studied back. This is the danger to me in not integrating the idea of some idea of evolution into creation. Remember I talked about how Zoroaster had accepted the Aristotelian thought of two-thought law, which I put over here on the board, you that was not here. When Aristotle made the circle and said everything in the circle is A, everything out of the circle is not A, and made that a divine law of thought. And that is where...
Aristocracy from?
Hmm?
Is that where we get aristocracy, elitism, separation?
Absolutely. This is where we get this duality of this or that. Bad, good. You're either bad, you're either good. You're either going to heaven, you're either going to hell. This, that. And that has followed us all the way up into Judeo-Christianity and still is very alive today in that idea that we are not seeing each other multidimensionally, we're not seeing these in-between gray areas, we're not realizing that everybody's a little good, everybody could be not so little good, and all of this can live in one person. All these inconsistencies of humanity at this point is all in the same person. I remember back when we came into sonship and through Bill Britton and all of that, where two was sleeping in the bed and one, you know, and we tried to tell people that doesn't mean two different people. It means maybe two aspects of yourself. Something is taken, something is left. Something is taken, something is left. But everybody always saw this as, and to the point that I even had a woman come to me who said, you know, I used to sleep better when my husband was a sinner. But since he got saved, I get worried because if the rapture comes and Jesus comes, I don't know which one of us is going to be taken, which of us is going to be left. Very sincere about it because she so believed in this or that, the two-thought law kind of thing. So this is something we're trying to deal with here and make you realize that nobody's all bad. Nobody is just all good. Have you ever really known anybody that's just all good 100%? No. And I've really never known anybody, if you get to know more about them, that is all bad. Even the worst mass murderer or whatsoever, I'll guarantee you somewhere you might find a very compassion in other areas, a very good heart, and so on and so forth. So it's very difficult. It's really illusionary to separate the sheep on the right and the goats on the left kind of theology that Judeo-Christianity is all about. You just can't do that. It's totally impossible. You have to take everybody individually and where they are, and you've got to learn to know people in all the many facets that make them up as a multidimensional person in the inconsistency of humanity. See, that's the thing. As long as we are in humanity, and until divinity and humanity become one, there's going to be an inconsistency in humanity. That's something we just got to accept. As long as we have that human part that is not integrated to our cosmic or divine part, there's going to be inconsistencies in us. And I think that's where a lot of people get disillusioned with each other, is we put each other on a pedestal and we want somebody to be all this all the time. Isn't that true? You ever, you know, you fall in love, you marry somebody, and you want them to be all loving to you all the time and to be supportive all the time, and you want them to be up all the time while you go through your mood swings and whatever, but they can't do that because you need them all the time to stroke you and to tell you you're beautiful, to tell you're wonderful. And the minute you find out nobody can be all anything all the time, you're ready to dump them and find somebody else. See how much that lie has caused us to be unhappy in so many things, because we can't accept people in their inconsistency of their humanity. You have to accept humanity at where it is today as it is. You can't make it something it's not. Please understand that. That's important to me, that there's certain things that are inconsistent about humanity, about the genetics of humanity. There's not really a spiritual divine order that's been integrated yet into humanity. That's why we talk about God within us, but dare not to say God as us. Now, the ego would like to turn around and make humanity God. No, as long as there's humanity, God can live in humanity. But when God would become humanity, it'll so raise the vibratory frequency of humanity that a man will be created. And that's what man is. Man is the raising of humanity to a divine level where there is a merger of spiritual evolution with biological evolution to make one species, the union of God and man. Are you with me thus far? I'll be glad to stop, and if you want to ask something at that point or clarify, I'll be glad to do that. And I think that's what's happening, and I was glad to hear this weekend that come out. It really was a confirmation to me that at this time on the planet Earth, there's a great merger happening of two evolutionary processes that have been separated in consciousness that are merging together on the planet at this time. Your spiritual, which is the divine evolution, and the biological evolution to become one. And it's been coming closer and closer and closer and closer until the Earth is the focal point in which that happens. That is one of the purposes of the planet Earth, is for that is happening to find its place, its point of union. So the man did not know this. Now, about the time we approach about 1800 years before the time of Jesus Christ, we come to a time when man is becoming homo sapien, which means that man is becoming an awakened, self-conscious individual. He's now becoming a thinker. He's not just the product of the tribe. He's not just a product of the culture, or of his civilization. He's not just following the pattern, but he begins to have what we call a expansion of consciousness experience. And this is what Abraham is going to represent at this point. Now, what is happening? The first thing that causes a conscious expansion experience in mankind at this time is his observation first of Mother Earth. The first observation that he makes is Mother Earth doesn't give him forth fruit and does not create the food that sustains him until first rain has come down upon Mother Earth. He begins to observe these two things coming together produces creation. This is the first thing that changes his consciousness, that Mother Earth is not creating by herself. And they begin to refer to the rain as the magical substance that comes from the sky, and they called it from the Father of the skies. So they look to see the masculine element first had to come and cause Mother Earth to produce her fruit that sustained them. By observing that, he shifted to the woman. For the first time, he begins to observe his connection, the masculine, with the woman, and realizes that just when the Father of the skies withholds its magical substance, Mother does not produce, becomes barren, he noticed that as he sustains himself from the woman, she does not produce, and comes to the conclusion that without the male, the woman cannot create. Now this sets a new premise of deity, from deity being totally feminine, the male being subservient, to now an equality of male and female. This is depicted in your Bible, by the way, by what is called Baalism. Now, if you're like me, I have just assumed that Baal was a bad person because God didn't like him. Correct? I never questioned. I even knew what Baal did. And really, Baalism did become corrupt later in time, but it didn't start out that way. What Baalism is about was the first time that a male and female begin to rule and have dominion over the earth. This is the first time now. Are you following me? From just feminine deity to masculine being subservient, now to an equality of them, and they had dominion over all the earth. You got to get the strand here that's going to come in later through Genesis that's going to please these people who constantly want to revert back to Baalism. If you really remember your reading of your Old Testament, and if you're really a student of the Bible, you'll see how this begin to be such an issue. This is one of the first thing supposedly Yahweh wants to deal with is this Baal thing. It's an important situation because no matter what supposedly Jehovah said to do, the people kept drifting back into this because it had become a very established place in the temple where the male and the female were equal and had dominion. In other words, divinity was now seen as male and female. But in the redefining of the woman and the fact that people kept converting back to that certainly is what's going to make a difference in how things are judged at that point. Okay? Now we'll hit back somewhat with that. But here's what happens. When man comes to this place that we're going to call Abraham, and he comes to the place that he is experiencing the evolutionary leap, which he calls the voice. It's later translated as the voice of God. It's not some God outside speaking to Abraham. It's what's happening inside of Abraham that speaks to him in a conscious expansion experience. And all of a sudden, man who had never dared to leave his mother, Earth, gets the call to go beyond his boundaries and to move out and to experience a more expanded experience as a human being. And therefore, he gets the call and says, something has told me that I do not have to exist within this limited boundary geographically, but that it's time for me to move out. So he gets the call to go out. And this is actually, as far as I can find and study, the very bottom root and origin of where Judeo-Christianity has its root at this point. And this story, finally, as time goes on, it becomes a story. It becomes a midrash. A midrash is a Hebrew term for a cultural story that is passed on orally from generation to generation to generation to generation to generation. What is interesting in the studying of this, that this happened around 1800 years before Christ. When it is actually written down and documented to be a part of the scriptures that you're going to have later on, is 920 BC. That's the first time the first so-called scriptures are written down by anyone is almost 900 years later than when the event happened. There is 900 years between when it happened and when it was written down, and you tell me that somebody was writing down the experience the minute that it happened? No, it had orally been passed down for 26 generations. People told the story of Abraham sitting around campfires for 900 years from generation to generation. And the Hebrews, as you know, that mentality is very good at telling these wonderful cultural stories that were passed down from generation to generation to generation before they were written. So the first time that this is written down is around 920 BC, 900 years after Abraham, that is about Abraham, is now written. To understand when something is written, you have to understand that when things are written or even spoken, it is written and spoken in time and space, and it is written when certain things are taking place, and there is always a cultural, social, environmental kind of influence in anything that you and I would say. Listen to how much this weekend, how much yesterday did we keep bringing the word in about what's happening in the world and in America today? Huh? If all these tapes that were made yesterday from the talks were written down, it would certainly have written on it that this is what happened in the 90s in the United States of America and in the world in the 1990s. It's not about what happened thousands of years ago. It's about what's happening now with the government and with elitism. We talked about the political process of this election that has to do with specific people at a specific time who are facing specific problems in this country that may not be the problems at another time. Do you understand? And for us to take that and impose that upon people thousands of years later is totally ridiculous. They need to hear what's happening in their time, and they need to have God to define himself in their time rather than imposed upon what was happening at that time. So the first writings that begins to define the world and man and his God around 920 BC will later be documented as the first strand of the Bible called the Yahwehist or J document. What is happening at this time is that the nation of Israel, and please remember, this evolutionary experience of so-called Abraham, which again is mankind at an evolutionary position, not necessarily one figure. It is man calling himself out of his limitation. What is that experience, which is later called God, named Jehovah or Yahweh, is again a selective God in the sense that it is the God of that people, of that nation. That's why a lot of us in this room have experienced and dabbled into British Israelism and into that kind of thing. I did back in the 70s and studied it, and historically, it's very accurate. There's much accuracy in the studying of electism in the sense of if you're going to go with Yahweh, you can follow that all the way down to a chosen people, an elect people. It's absolutely not that it's wrong if you follow that pattern from that. But you've got to understand, as I said today, that Yahweh only represents the God of Israel. It was not the God of the Gentiles, was not the God of any other nation, was not the creator of all mankind, was not the creator of life at that time. He was merely the deity over Israel, which has the influence of many things. One of them is the woman issue. The fact that deity had been Mother Earth and divinity all those years, and the fact that man had just come to recognize that he holds semen in the seed, which starts life for the first time, and that woman is not the creator without him, just as the rain is not is the cause of Mother Earth bringing forth, man began to feel superior. He began to feel more divine, that he's the starter of life. And no longer will God be retained as deity. Okay? Remember now, we come into that time that he does for a time accept the fact of equality of male and female. But pretty soon, as we come into this time of the making of Judeo-Christianity, the idea is to totally take deity out of the woman completely, which Judeo-Christianity does. Now that's, I do not say that with a chip on my shoulder. I say that it's actual, and it amazes me how blind people are in Christianity to not see their own Bible totally takes the deity out of the female and totally makes male the only thing that is deity. Well, to do that, the first thing you're going to have to do is you're going to have to create a concept of God that is totally male and doesn't need a woman to create. So the reversal happens. At one time, woman was thought not needing man to create, and now we have man not needing a woman to create, and woman becomes very important to be targeted very early to begin to take her glory away from her and her equality as even a created creature of this God. Only men are created. The woman comes out of the man becomes her head, and no woman can even have contact with this deity but through having a man and a male. And honey, that doesn't go through the Old Testament, but it is adopted into the New Testament through Paul, who tells us flat out that God did not create the woman, God created the man. So how can we get on talk shows and talk about the sexist position of this culture and the abuse of women and the downplay of the woman in this culture and society until we're willing to come down and talk about our roots? But nobody will talk about the religious, the Bible, Christianity. You know why? Because they'd probably lose it. They'd have no audience. They'd have no, they'd be picketed by the fundamentalists. And you got to understand, fundamentalism right now is a very, very powerful entity in this culture. Many people have moved very much more to the right and in the conservative arena of things right now. And to me, this is one of the real last surges of this kind of power. You're seeing everything it's got. You know, the Bible talks about how the beast shall raise up one more time out of the sea. And that's the way I see that. I see this last surge of all the power of the old mentality of that pulling itself together to be as powerful as it possibly can, calling out, return back! Return back to the family! Return back to this! Return back! But it's not going to work. That's not the answer, is to return back. Now, I realized it was a simpler day. I realized the time that my parents and many of your parents and maybe even your parents that are over 50, 60 years old or so, realized that being raised up in a less complicated world, being married meant being married through thick and thin, and the woman accepted her role pretty much, and she knew what she was to do, and she took her place in that area. And the world will never be that again, is what I'm trying to tell you. We'll never make the world like it was 50, 60, 80, 90, 100 years ago. We'll never see that again. No matter how much we try, we cannot return back to that kind of a world. So we have to look at going forward, and we have to learn with being a part of redefining and reestablishing ourselves as time is moving on. And I'll tell you, people who don't do that soon are going to find themselves really moving against the tide and really moving against everything that is trying to happen. But those who are willing for change and those who are more fluid, I call it, will certainly make it much easier through this great transitional time that we're going through. I'm going to hurry on to him because I want to get some other things here soon. But this is about, at this time of this document, is when the kingdom is splitting. Now, most of you know that in history, that the kingdom of Israel split and goes into the southern kingdom and into the northern kingdom. Are you all aware of that? I get so tickled at people. You know, fundamentalists, I tell you, they'll fight you over their Bible. You get talking about it, they don't even know what you're talking about. Huh? I mean, people will kill you over their Bible, and most of them haven't even read it.
You know, you get them talk just good old black and white King James Bible, and people say, I don't know that's in there. Well, how can you call truth that you don't even read or experience or know? You know, but anyway, there is a history of Israel splitting, and the southern kingdom, which was Judah, and I believe Benjamin, moved into the south, and the 10 other tribes left moved into the north. One's called the house of Israel, one's called the house of Judah. The first place the word Jew is used in your Bible is Judah is fighting Israel. And Jew is used as a nickname for Judah, just like you'd say Mike for Michael, Sue for Susan, Jew for Judah. So those 10 tribes were never called Jews. Only the southern tribe were called Jews. So you have to understand, not all Jews are Israelites at that point. Now, this makes a difference. And the question is what caused the separation? The separation is over government or hierarchy. Judah believed and wanted to hold on to the idea that God was hierarchical, that God spoke to a chosen spokesman. The spokesman handed down God's word to the priesthood, and the priesthood gave it to the masses. The northern kingdom said, no, we are more democratic. We want to vote in our own king. And we know that Jehovah, or our God, wants to talk to everybody. We don't want somebody to talk for us. We will have a king, but we'll not have a dynasty. We'll not have someone representing God to us. God will speak to us. So two different aspects of God was written. One document of who God was as God spoke to everybody from a democratic way was written in the north, and God from a hierarchical point of view was written in the south. And that's what divided these kingdoms. So you had two documents. In the south you had the Yahweh document. In the north you had the Eloist document. Now, if you look at this, you'll find your first origin of Protestantism and Catholicism. See? You have to know where the origin and where the root starts. Protestantism is more democratic. Catholicism says, no, there will be someone chosen that will be passed down, and he will be the one that God speaks to, and he will tell his priests and cardinals and so on and so, and they will give it to the masses. But God cannot speak directly to the masses. Okay? Now, we know around 750, the Eloist document came in, 920 BC, the Yahweh's separate. Now, something happens in history that's very important, and the Assyrians come down upon the northern 10-tribe kingdom and carries them captive. Never to be again. They're to lose their identity. They're to be scattered to all the nations of the world. And they're taken by the Assyrians. Now, here's what's interesting. Some of those in the northern kingdom escaped the wrath of the Assyrians by going down into Judah and joining with Judah. And when they did, they took their Eloist document down there. There's where the two sticks came together. A lot of British Israel people are still looking for that to happen and think it happened in America. It did not. It happened right here when those of the northern kingdom went out and joined Judah, and now you've got the two sticks coming together and you've got two thinkers. You've got those who see God is speaking to every man, and you've got those who said, no, God only speaks to the hierarchical. Now, to bring those people together, what's the simple thing to do? Take the two documents and make them one document. Now, that's in your Bible. If you that are good students will realize that you can preach it either way because it's mixed. So here's how they decided to solve the problem. I tell you what, let's put in there God did speak to everybody. I've preached that, how God spoke to every man, woman, and child of Israel. Sounded like thunder, and they all feared God. And I said, And they said, when we write the story, let's add something that connects this. And let's say, yeah, God spoke to everybody, but everybody got afraid and said, no, we don't want to hear God. So let's send Moses up on the mountain. And they put it together. Everybody could be happy now. Yes, they're saying God wanted to speak to everybody, but everybody didn't want God to speak to him. So they chose to go into the Yahwehist document and say, no, let's let God speak to some man, and the man will come down out of the mountain and tell us what God said, and we can carry on these two. That's how two strands came together to be one strand in the Bible. All right, then we come to a time later, around 621 B.C., when another thing happens, and Nebuchadnezzar comes down upon the southern kingdom and takes them into Babylonian captivity. That one you remember, don't you? How they went off into Babylonian captivity. All right, then after so many years of that, however long it was, things changed, the king changed, a more friendly king came in and allowed them to return back to rebuild the wall and the city and the temple. Do you remember that? Yeah. All right, this is an important time in history. In the rebuilding of the walls in Jerusalem, they discovered another document in the walls called the Neutros Domus. Neutro Domus. Deutro 2, Nomus Law, and it was called the Second Law of Moses. Now, this is an important time. Let's take women and make them unclean. Huh? When they're going through their biological, natural, monthly cycle, they'll be unclean. And any man that touches them is unclean, and we'll put them out of the city, and we'll make them go through all kinds of rituals. And what a great time again to start forming and redefining the mentality and the perception of how man is to see himself as he is being totally manipulated by an elite few people. See, all of these things I'm giving you today, we can talk about elitism. We can talk about all the stuff we talk about, but until we are ready to come down to the very origin of where it started, which is in our Christian religion, we're not going to do anything about transforming or changing anything that's going to last. So the third document is added into the Bible, the Neutro Domus, or Second Law, under King Uzziah. Now we come up to 135 years before the time of Jesus. And we come to a very influential man or prophet called Isaiah. It is not the Isaiah that we know. It is the second Isaiah. In fact, the second Isaiah is the writings in your Bible from the 40th chapter to the 53rd chapter. From the first chapter to the 40th chapter is the first Isaiah. The second Isaiah is from chapter 40 and 53. The same Isaiah did not write the entire book of Isaiah. In fact, through the Dead Sea Scrolls and so on and so forth, they have found more updated documents of Isaiah in 1947. Are y'all aware of that fact? See, this is the thing that is dangerous about canons, about making holy books, is because you really don't know when some new word's going to be coming in that has been hidden in bottles somewhere. I think they'll always be finding new things and that'll give new light. But you've got to understand that the people have frozen this thing in a book, and they don't want to have to really change it. So they try to keep us away from understanding. And it amazes me that since 1945, which is the year I was born, in the finding of the ancient Coptic books, which was found in Egypt in... What's that called? Hammadi, Egypt, that very few probably have ever heard of it. 2 years, which, by the way, was 13 volumes of 49 works were found that are not in your Bible. of 16 centuries of works. 2 years later, the Dead Sea Scrolls of, in 1947 are found. And I want to move on so we have time to deal with this, because I want to give you some new information here of some things that Jesus said that never came in the King James Bible that are very important, I think, to not only this weekend, but can... See, we have to process some things. There's some things I heard yesterday that I have to admit did not gel inside of me. And therefore, I'm not judging that, but I'll have to get more information on that before I can come to a conclusion about it. And it had to do with animals and so on and so forth. And believe it or not, I did not know this was in here. I had this book with me. I was really tired last night, and I felt I should read. And lo and behold, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And I thought, wow, this is so timely for this particular time. In some of the scrolls that was written, we have such things as, well, let's see, the Gospel according to Thomas. We do not have that in the King James, which was written by Judas Thomas. And I like to read you something that is in... I have the Gospel of Thomas at home. Does anybody here have the Gospel of Thomas? Good. Should read it. See, as I said today, who said what words we should abstract? You know what I really wanted to do in this workshop if I had time, and I just haven't had it? I wanted to have a class, and I had this thing made up of where you and I was going to sit down and totally organize a religion from the beginning to the end, called atheism. Just because somebody believed in some principles from A to Z, and we believed in that, we was going to take that belief from A to Z and make it atheism, and sit down and write it and know how to do that. I wanted you to really experience what it is to organize a religion and what it's for. And we will be able to do some of these things as time goes on. The Gospel according to Thomas had a lot of familiar things in it, and had a lot of things that we don't have in the King James. And I just picked out a couple of things I thought you might find interesting. Jesus said, if people ask you where you have come from, tell them we have come from the light and from the place where the light is produced. Isn't that beautiful? If that would have made it into the King James, would that have not made some difference in our idea of where we came from, that we did not start as physical beings, but that we started from the light and where the light is produced. This one I've quoted a lot of times on tapes and things. I've always loved it. But Jesus said, when you make the two one, and when you make the inner as the outer, and the outer as the inner, and the above as the below, and when you make the male and the female into a single one, so that the male will not be male and the female not be female, then you shall enter the kingdom of heaven. I love that one. That's a great one. He also said in the Gospel according to Thomas, this is great, listen to this one. Whoever knows the all but fails to know himself lacks everything. Now, do you think Christianity wanted that in there because he didn't want you to know yourself? You needed to know all they had told you God was, and at the same time knowing all that they said God was, neglecting to know yourself. They did not want to connect the things that are recorded that Jesus did as your own potential in yourself. Therefore, they have made separation actually a reality. We become concerned about 18 years missing in our King James Bible in the life of Jesus. What in the world did Jesus say for 18 years that has never been recorded, and what was going on? Of course, there's many, many ideas. Dr. Potter, in the book, you that have read the book by him, what is it? I can't even think of the book. It's The Missing Years of Jesus. The lost, yeah. Certainly... gave his ideas of the sense that Jesus was a student of the Essene Brotherhood, which believed and taught vegetarianism, and according to Josephus, the Jewish historian, reincarnation. Did Judeo-Christianity take out Jesus ever mentioning reincarnation or vegetarianism? See, a lot of you that are having trouble with that and saying, well, it's just not in the Bible. Think of all that's not in the Bible. And why is it in the Bible? Why was certain things said to be kept out and certain things was put in? You have to understand these things. Suppose the new documents were found in which Jesus is shown to explicitly advocating all of these ideas as vegetarianism and as reincarnation would show up. Believe me, it would change the whole idea. The Gospel of the Holy Twelve, the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus Christ, which I have and have read, is extremely easy, and the Essene Gospel of John, and this is what I want to read from. A little long, but I think you'll find it interesting. Here are two passages from the Essene Gospel of John that deal with killing and vegetarianism. And Jesus answered, "Thou shalt not kill, for life is given to all by God, and that which God has given let no man take away. For I tell you truly, from one mother proceeds all that lives upon the earth. Therefore he who kills, kills his brother, and from him will the earth mother turn away. And the flesh of slain beasts in his body will become his own tomb. For I tell you truly, he who kills, kills himself, and whosoever eats the flesh of slain beasts eats of the body of death. For in his body every drop of blood turns to poison. For the wages of sin is death. Kill not, neither eat the flesh of your innocent prey, lest you become the slaves of death." And Jesus continued, "But I say unto you, kill neither man nor beast, nor yet the food which goeth into your mouth. For if you eat living food, the same will quicken you. But if you kill your food, the dead food will kill you also. For life comes only from life, and from death comes always death. For everything which kills your foods kills your bodies also. And everything that kills your bodies kills your souls. Your bodies become what your foods are, even as your spirits likewise become what your thoughts are. So eat always from the table of God the fruits of the trees, the grains, the grasses of the field, the milk of the beast, the honey of the bees. For everything beyond this is Satan, and leads by the way of sins and disease unto death." One more, and this is from the Gospel of the Holy Twelve. Now you're asking me, where are you getting this? These are things that have been discovered since the Bible was put together. And as Jesus entered into a certain village, he saw a young cat. Now see, it's interesting, nowhere in our Bible is really animals as domestic or pets ever basically mentioned, other than dogs in certain areas. But Jesus never seemed to address the animal issue at all. But he did. He really did. Even though you can't find it in King James, you can find it here. He saw a young cat which had none to care for her, and she was hungry and cried unto him, and he took her up and put her inside his garment, and she lay in his bosom. And when he came into the village, he set food and drink before the cat, and she ate and drank, and showed thanks unto him. And he gave unto her one of his disciples, who was a widow, whose name was Lorenza, and she took care of him. And some of the people said, "This man careth for all creatures. Are they his brothers and sisters, that he should love them?" And he said unto them, "Verily, these are your fellow creatures of the great household of God. Yea, they are your brothers and sisters, having the same breath of life in the eternal. And whosoever careth for one of the least of these, and giveth it to eat and drink in its need, the same doeth it unto me. And whosoever willingly suffereth one of these to be in want and defendeth it not, will evilly evilly treated, suffereth the evil as done unto me, for as you have done in this life, so shall it be done in you in the life to come. But it's just so interesting, I found this. I did not know that these were there. It's just there, and I just found them last night. I thought this is so appropriate for this time to maybe deal with this one issue. And again, you have to process all these things, whether you hear them from me or anybody else, and see in yourself how you feel, and you be true and be guided basically to yourself. Now, I could go on and on about this pre-biblical history, and we have a few minutes, about 20 minutes left, so we'll open up if you want to talk, ask questions or whatever. I want to give you that opportunity and time to do it, or maybe you want to contribute to this in some way. Yes, Betty.
Why haven't they... like the Essene Gospels and this book she just read, haven't they republished them and made them available to us?
They don't want them out. You have to understand that this so challenges the established traditional ideas of God and of life and so on and so forth. This yeah, absolutely. That would make sense if you stop and think that they don't want anything that's going to have to be newly added and to change the concept of where they have so successfully had control, you know, over people in these areas.
Yeah. You told about before about something happening in 138 B.C.
Right.
Would you repeat that right now so it can go on this tape?
Yes, okay.
I would like to get this tape.
Yes. Okay, that brings us to the fourth strand of the second Isaiah. What had happened at this point is that they had looked at what had happened and how successful this had been in the sense of a national God. And the second Isaiah proposed the idea for the first time of preparing the way for universalism. Let's make Yahweh or Jehovah become the God of everybody, the creator of all mankind. See, up until that time, it wasn't. Remember again, there is no Genesis. Now there's a need for Genesis. So they begin to take all of the strands. What's the first one? The first thing is about male and female gave he them dominion. Remember that strand? But now let's go over to the other chapter and let's take the woman out of the man and let's totally redefine the whole situation. Okay. Now you got to understand this prepares for Christianity.
Yes.
Christianity, I know you're not going to want to hear this, but Christianity becomes the universal vehicle for Yahweh to be introduced as the God of all creation, built still up on Judaism. It still is to remain its roots in the Jewish idea, in the Israel idea of Yahwehism, but now through Christianity, we begin to see an opportunity for God, or as Jehovah Yahweh, to become the God of all creation. Now, then, at the time this is trying to be established, Jesus appears on the scene. Jesus had nothing to do with the pattern and the direction that things were going. He's not a product. He steps out of being a product of that thought mode, of that direction of thinking completely, and begins to be not the beginning of Christianity. The beginning of Christianity starts with Paul. That's another thing. I have tapes on these things in more detail of Old and New Testament. And the best ones are the ones I made in Charlotte, North Carolina. I don't know if they're back there, Don, or not. But the best ones, I went through this and couldn't stop. We couldn't even stop for a break. And I did about two and a half tapes straight through that day, all the way going through the Old to the New Testament and dealing with all of these kind. There's only one back there? Do you have the... You can duplicate more. Okay. If you're really interested in more than I can give you here in this, you should get those particular tapes.
I want this for my son.
Great.
So she can tell me what one.
Yes, she'll help you. And if any of you want them, they'll make them for you. Anybody else? She's counting to see how many copies to make of those tapes. Huh? Not too long ago in Charlotte, North Carolina, I remember. It's the first time I really went through the whole history. Did some neat stuff. You'll like the New Testament idea of how that the people begin to define things, that, you know, where the people was. I think it's Mark or Luke that wrote the first gospel, but his idea is that God entered Jesus at baptism and well, anyway, I won't go into it, but it's real neat. All the way to Matthew and Luke come up with the idea of at birth, the virgin birth. And finally, John says, no, it's not at baptism. It's not. It's from the very beginning. The beginning was the Word. The Word's with God. And the Word was God. And Christ was all the way back from the beginning. He has no beginning in birth. He has no beginning in baptism. He has beginning in creation. So when you see these things from that angle, you can see how this all fits in how it works toward more what we're talking about now in this sense. Anybody else? I have a question. So about 135 B.C. is when Yahweh is defined to be the creator God of everybody. Gentile, Jew, anybody is totally begins to become grafted in to everything, and that's Christianity. Christianity is available for anyone to come in and be grafted in to the root of Judaism.
That's when Genesis and the first part of the Bible was written, or I mean was made.
Exactly.
So, I mean, the other people, like the prophets and so on, were not able to refer to Genesis, to Moses' writings.
No, if you read that, you'll see that everything is pretty much set in its own time frame and really does not refer back to those things. If you'll really read it and see that for the first time, you'll see how that no one is referring back to some of these things that appear first in the Bible. Like I said, you'll never see Paul ever refer back to virgin birth. Yeah. Or the. You know what Paul finally says? He says that it's at the resurrection. Read it in Romans 1:4. 1:4. He says that it's absolutely in the resurrection that God came into Jesus. Every one of them's got a different angle to this whole thing, and none of them, and you can tell that it's all disconnected, and nobody had ever read anybody else's writing about it. They didn't even know, because it hadn't been written yet that way. So we do have to be careful about books and writings and those type of things, because you can put them together. I saw a quote in here that I just thought was so good. I can find it real quickly. Listen to this. Man's achievements rest upon the use of symbols. For this reason, we must consider ourselves as a symbolic, semantic class of life, and those who rule the symbols rules us. It's not that there's not some wonderful deep things in those scriptures. That's not what's bothering me. It's how they have ruled us by how they have put this stuff together to cause us to get this psychological drama in our mind to see a picture the way they want us to see it. But hey, when you start letting this mind be in you, which is in Christ Jesus, and you start letting this own self-knowledge, as he called it, this own intelligence begin to see for itself, you're not going to be looking through a glass darkly anymore. You're going to behold it face to face for exactly what it is. That's why I think the only thing that we hold on to, I hold on to Jesus, not because of my biblical association, but with my experimental.
Yes. That's right.
Jesus is an experience. I also can accept Jesus in the abstract.
Yeah.
I have no trouble in this multi-vertical dimensional level of understanding what Jesus is and what Jesus can represent. I know I heard in me at one time, Jesus represents all of the things about yourself you have forgotten.
Jesus is the outer personification of all of the latent potential that is in yourself. Well, I love that too. So I do want to know him in the power of that resurrection, of raising him from a historical figure to a symbolic figure that can reawaken in me what is in myself. But yes, I think we have enough history, not just the Bible, to know that there was someone. Now, I agree, I do not believe necessarily in that name was what he was. Now, I heard him say that that was a name that Paul gave him. I personally, in my studies, understand that that's the name the translators gave him in translating Paul's scriptures. I do not know. But see, that is not, I don't care what is his physical name.
Joshua?
Well, yeah, they say the Hebrew.
Joshua Ben-Joseph.
Yeah. Ben-Joseph, which means Jesus, or the son of Joseph. So you got a lot of things. You got Jesus traced back to virgin birth. You got a genealogy in the same Bible that traces him right back to Joseph too. So you got all kinds of different things going on in your own Bibles. But we just basically believed what has been kind of handed down. I'm not trying to take away the historical event, because that's basically a lot of what the Bible is at one level, is a history book. At another level, it's a whole lot of beautiful poetry and myths and stories that certainly will awaken in us certain things if we just kind of lighten up and not try to take it too literally at another level. I would like to get on your question, but that's certainly a big question, and we will deal with the cross, the crucifixion, the blood of Jesus at some point, and we'll deal with some of those issues. But you have to look and understand the influence of that kind of a story, and understand that it does have its roots also in the Old Testament and Yahwehism of sacrifice and blood shedding and animal sacrifice and all that kind of thing. And I think the best way to deal with that in yourself is process that again in your own inherent intelligence and see how you feel about that. I personally think Jesus handles it very well in the Course of Miracles. There is much information in there about the cross, about the crucifixion, and so on and so forth that Jesus himself has channeled through this individual. And let me tell you why. I'm very strong. I'm not a 100% Course of Miracles person. I'm not. But it has been something, it has been like a strand that I've integrated into myself that is very, very beautiful. But you got to understand my strong thing about it that has held me while everybody is really giving me a hard time over that all these years is the fact that I'd already been prepared and heard that somewhere there was something where Jesus had appeared in this Western culture in this time to give us an adjustment of many things. And the only thing that I have found that is directly declares to be from Jesus, which would have happened in the middle of the 60s in 1965 over a period of 7 years, is when these writings came out that caught my attention. And I do believe that Jesus is trying to contact us from a different way as a people of this culture, and not through his Eastern and his incarnation of 2,000 years ago, but through his incarnation of us. He's not the Galilean. He's not Nazareth. He's not the one of 2,000 years ago. He is the many-faceted one who's incorporated himself in you. So it makes sense to me that it had to come to and through a person, not a separate entity.